All right, now, I'm turning 40-year-old this year. I have been a part of that music playing business for about 20-odd years now. I've been on the stage. I've been in the studio. I've been on the YouTube. All that jazz, man, making music happen. But I'm ready to announce the next phase of my musical career and my first project I'm taking on. You ready for this?
Yeah, I'm excited. Let's see where you're going.
Man, you reach a point in your career where you're like, I don't want to be in the band. I want to create and manage the band. I want to be one of those people that puts together a group with a concept, and I put them together, package and put them out there, all that jazz. And I get to stay behind the scenes, stay home, just make a little mailbox money, you know?
There you go. Mailbox money. Everybody loves that.
You want to hear my concept for my first act?
Let's hear it. Yeah.
All right. Now, a friend of mine just recently introduced me to Bardcore. Bardcore, which is kind of an up-and-coming thing. Yeah, it's got a bunch of like Renaissance instruments. You got your lutes, your harps, and all this jazz, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're playing like modern contemporary songs. So you might have a Bardcore cover of a Smells Like Teen Spirit or a Billie Eyelash or whatever have you, right?
Billie Eyelash, right.
I think in the Bardcore scene of all these Renaissance players and stuff, there's a real absence of some hardcore, like, militant feminist anthems by bands like Bikini Kill, L7, stuff like that. So my first act I'm going to put together and manage, it's going to be an all-female Renaissance musician group playing those hardcore feminist anthems.
Okay.
And I got the perfect title. You ready for this?
I'm excited.
Band is going to be called Minstrel Cycle. Hardcore.
Okay.
Minstrel Cycle.
That's badass. Yeah, I like it.
Pretty badass, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that a whole lot. Okay. Yeah, I'm into it.
It's gold.
It's gold.
It's fucking
solid,
gold.
That's solid gold.
Yep, I'm accepting applications.
Yeah, and I really want this to happen, honestly. That's a Minstrel rad Cycle idea.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And you heard about it here on this installment of Dead and Lovely with your music manager buddy, Uncle Ben.
And me, your music fan guy, Hollywood Steve.
Yeah, that's
right.
On today's episode, we're talking about Starry Eyes from, 2014? Is that right? 2015? When is this?
Yeah, 2014.
Mm-hmm. 20 and 14. If you want to get straight onto the movie talk, there's a timestamp for you in the podcast description. But I know you got to get them socks and shoes off your leg feet.
Yep.
Hang out with your boys, catch up with us, drink on a co-beer, and so forth. So stick around, have yourself a good time. I'm going to have myself a co-beer co. Do you want to have one?
I do not have one. I have a seltzer water here.
Straight edge.
Yeah, going totally straight. I'm CM Punk in it.
Damn, dude, look at you. Mm-hmm. From the top rope straight edge, huh?
That's right, from the top rope straight edge.
Well, I'm going to make up for you here by drinking on this beer from Burial. I was talking about last week how we here in Knoxville just recently started getting Burial beer from Asheville, the best brewery on the East Coast, and I'm so excited about it. I think I've had a Burial beer almost every day since we started getting them, which has been a wonderful thing. But I've yet to have this one. This one is called Until There Is No Longer.
And that's a very Burial name.
It is a very Burial name. Their names are fucking ridiculous. They sound like indie black metal, you know, song and record titles. Apparently they named their beers ridiculous as shit because it's so hard to find names that are not copywritten now for beers or anything. Yeah, and they also like it because if you Google it, it'll only pull up their beer, basically.
Oh,
so
cool.
Yeah, makes it real easy to memorize, though, you know?
It does.
Real easy. This is described as a pair of wandering orbs fixated upon the blood sky, and behind them is a lurking addiction to wanting to know what lays beyond it.
Jeez.
Double dry hopped with hand-selected Citra pellets with Citra Cryo powder pellets. That was kind of a twist ending, wasn't it? It's about beer.
I was up for this fantasy that they were setting up, but no,
it was
a
D&D campaign,
right?
And then technical beer nerd talk. It's like, okay, 7.4%,
double nerd there.
Honestly, you're right. It smells really kind of funky and luscious, got a little earthy aroma to it, but also some of that light pineapple kind of smell. It's kind of a hazy pineapple juicy looking beer. Hopefully it's not too sweet. Let's find out about it in Wet a Whisker.
I hope it is too sweet. Like, it was NWO who used to say that, right?
That's right.
Too sweet.
They did
sweet.
Say that. Too sweet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is really good. It is kind of sweet, but dude, because it's Burial, it is like exactly the way that you want it to be, you know?
Right.
It reminds me a little bit of like Bearded Iris Home style, only less of that grapefruit peppery funk that Homestyle has.
Yeah.
This is more balanced and smooth. It's really fucking good and no traceable alcohol whatsoever.
Hell yeah. Tastes like a beer, I reckon, then.
It's real fucking good, man. I'll tell you what, I found a new liquor addiction this week.
Uh-oh. Is it a manicot?
Oh, the manicot. I'm going through all the noodle-based beverages, right?
Yeah.
Man, so the other night, we had ourselves a big-ass skank banger 80s hair metal tribute show.
Hell yeah.
And as we typically do, if we're playing around downtown Knoxville, we stop in at Fin2 for a sushi sandwich before the show.
It is really good.
Thing. Yeah. Really good. That's my favorite like pre-rock show meal, too. You know, you got some carbs to keep you going and soak
up
some
booze.
Not
too heavy, though. Yeah.
Not too heavy. That's the thing, man. So Kate got there before we did, and she occupied her table, and waitress comes by and she's like, do you want anything to drink while you wait on your buddies or whatever? And she's like, I want something like a Negroni, but with whiskey instead.
Okay.
And the waitress is like, that is a thing. That is a Boulevardier.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I have heard of that drink. Yes.
It is a damn delight. Do you like yourself a Negron?
I do. I do.
Oh, man. You'd love this thing, dude. You'd love this. I mean, it's just equal parts of a Campari sweet vermouth and a nice bourbon whiskey. Actually, they used a Japanese whiskey over there because they have so many different Japanese whiskeys, but it was so good, man. Bartender April made it, and it was incredible. Like, we all sat down, and we're like, what is that? And had a sip, and then I think we ended up ordering, like, 8 of them between, like, the 4 of us.
That's right.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super good, man. You been drinking anything good lately?
Yeah. I mean, just a couple days ago, I had a Frame South Pacific IPA, which isn't technically a style. I guess it was just a descriptor of the particular flavors. There was, you know, kind of that pineapple-y, citrusy type flavor, but it was probably the most smooth IPA I've had with those flavors. Like, it was so easily drinkable. I very much
did.
Enjoyed
you
it.
Was it so smooth that you gave it your heart? You made it real.
Yeah, I didn't want to forget about it, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, no.
Yeah.
That'd be ridiculous.
Ridiculous, yeah.
Good call, man. Good move.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm not drinking anything right at this moment, because we're going to be probably recording a Patreon episode of Legacy Brutality right after this, or a little bit after this. So I got to keep my wits about.
They don't let you drink alcohol on those.
They don't let you drink alcohol over there. No.
Edge establishment for sure.
Yeah,
man. I don't want you breaking
yeah.
edge and making a Patreon episode now, so it's not allowed, man. How's your week been, dude? I've had a pretty busy week overall, man.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't gotten around to watching a whole lot.
Same.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a week, but you know, I caught a few things. What have you been up to?
Man, just a little bit too much. Working on a bunch of stuff, learning a bunch of stuff. Being outside a bunch. We've had a couple really nice days here in Tennessee. Of course, you know, Tennessee easing into springtime means you'll have a really great day, then it'll be like 20 the next day, you know?
Right, yeah.
But it's all right. I've been enjoying some sunshine as much as I can, getting in the gymnasium, having a good time, horsing around in there, throwing them weights around, and shredding on some guitar this week. So it's been good. But I'm with you. I only had time to watch like 2 things this week, and I think we watched them both on the same day.
Oh, wow. What'd you get up to? What was your double feature?
Double feature.
Uh-huh.
We watched a dang old Deadpool.
All right. He's a wise, cracking fella.
Man, it's so good. It's
yeah,
so
it's a good
fucking
movie.
Great. Mm-hmm. That first one still absolutely holds up. The humor is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's so brutal and filthy. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that might be the best translation from like comic book vibe to movie vibe that has ever been. Like, it really nails the books. Every time I watch the Deadpool flicks, it just makes me want to go back and read the Deadpool comics. I have a bunch of them in storage somewhere.
Yeah, I I definitely have rewatched one and two a good number of times. I don't ever think it's a bad time. Mm-mm. Right?
I'm stoked about this new one with Wolverine and shit. It's going to be a blast.
Mm-hmm.
So that held up. It was great. The other thing we watched was a dang old Midsommar.
Okay.
God damn,
that's quite the doubleheader you got there.
You know, they're a little bit different tonally. I'm going to say.
Slightly, but not a lot. Like, you know, Dani keeps having those, like, moments where she breaks the fourth wall, like, looks into the camera and makes, like, a chimichanga joke.
Yeah, she's cracking wise the whole time, you know? Yeah, that's right. Man, that movie, fuck, dude. It is so good. It is such a cool fucking movie, man. We did it on the show many moons ago, so check that one out if you want to hear our thoughts on that one. But goddamn, man, I love that movie. Ari Aster, man, he just fucking gets it.
he makes some very interesting flicks. I'm interested in what he's got going on.
For real, man. Mm-hmm. Great movie. Loved it, man.
Yeah, that's a good one. I need to rewatch it. I haven't seen it in a while.
So, what about you?
We've been watching, just prepping for the Hellrankers episode coming out in April, before 420. We're doing the Cheech and Chong movies. So we watched Things Are Tough All Over and Still Smoke It.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Are these other cannabis-centric comedies, I assume?
You know what? Surprisingly, there's a good bit of drugs involved in both of them.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't want to say too much. Definitely check out the Hellrankers episode. But there are some things that do not hold up in any way whatsoever.
Ooh, okay.
Makes it easy. But that's what Hellrankers is all about. It can't be all fun times. We also on Sunday watched a little film called Butt Boy. That's right. To celebrate Lori's birthday. Butt Boy is about a guy who kills people with his butt. Just sucks them up into his butt. And his butt. I guess there's like a blender up there.
Oh, dude, I saw a trailer for this. I remember this now. Yes.
Yeah.
I actually did see a little preview for this. And I was like, what in the fuck? So how is it?
Man, surprisingly, for a movie with that premise, boring and too serious.
Oh, disappointing.
Yeah. I think, like, keeping it serious would work if it was a short in an anthology. It'd be like, it was funny because they took it seriously. But because it's a full-length movie, it's like, okay, so this is just a serious movie about a guy who, you know, kills people with his butt.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
That doesn't really do it for me.
Yeah, I mean, maybe check it out sometime if you're interested. But yeah, it did, like, surprise me with just, like, the tone seeming to not be what I had hoped for. There's also a synth score throughout that is pretty badass, but I don't know that it fits the movie.
All right. Well, on the bright side, though, it did set us up for the sequel, Butt Boys to Men. Butt Boys to Men.
That's a perfect sequel.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's a coming-of-age tale about a bunch of butt boys becoming butt men. Yeah,
and then they start an a cappella group.
Oh, yeah. And then ABC, like, BBUD. Mm-mm.
East Coast Slamming.
The best. The best, dude.
Yes. Anyway, so that's what I watched this week as long. Other than that, we've been watching Fargo's.
You smell burnt toast? Are you okay?
I'm having a rough go of it.
Is there a gas leak over there?
We've been watching Fargo and we're up to season 5. And I'd already watched season 5 as it came out because I love Fargo. It's a great show.
Man, I've not heard from one person that has said, man, I watched it and I didn't get into it. Or, man, I watched it and it's overrated. I've not talked to one person that says that show sucks.
So
like, I don't know why I've put it off. I mean, because there's 80 billion shows ahead of it that I need to watch, I guess.
Well, there's a ton of shows out there, sure. But Fargo's one of the best.
I'm going to watch Family Matters before I get to it. I've heard that was real sick.
Well, yeah, you'll need to because Fargo's technically a spinoff.
Kind
of
ties in.
Because Family Matters was a spinoff of Perfect Strangers.
Right.
And then, so they spun off the character of Fargo Fargantonian.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, season 5 of Fargo is so fucking good. And if, you know, you've seen Fargo up to this point and haven't watched season 5, go watch it. So good.
Actually, though, now that we're talking about this, I do wonder if Officer Carl Winslow, if
that'd
he did
rad.
Step into the Stefan Urkel transformation machine, if
that'd
he
cool.
would come out as a white female Minnesota police officer.
Oh my God! Is you know, that what happened?
I think that's what happened. He stepped into
so
the machine.
Fargo, the original movie Fargo is the spinoff.
Yeah. That's actually Carl Winslow the whole
that's
time.
Actually, Carl
it's not Francis McDormand
stepped into. Steve Urkel,
yeah.
Stefan Urkel machine. That didn't just turn him into Stefan Urkel. I don't know if you watched the later seasons, but boy, there was like a French persona.
There was
a very racist Kung Fu character.
Yeah, I was going to say there's like a Kung Fu like Bruce Lee character that was like,
yeah.
Ooh.
Anyway, so check out Fargo.
You remember when cheese was a nerdy food? When it was like, cheese?
Yeah.
This is food for nerds.
What the fuck?
What the fuck what was going on? And especially considering this was like at the peak of the America, oops, we paid too many farmers to produce dairy. Let's start this Got Milk campaign and tell everybody milk is a superfood thing. And they're like, let's make Urkel say that it sucks and that lame people eat cheese. What is going on with that?
Well, that's the thing is it was, it's gotta predate Urkel, right? I believe that was around before. Maybe I think so. It may have been in like a Revenge of the Nerds movie.
Really?
Maybe though. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe Urkel invented nerds eat cheese.
It's weird though. Now that I think about it, we're like. We talked on the show in the past, like when we did Temple of Doom on the show, about like the really weird spree of like food racism that we endured as kids that were born in the 80s.
Right,
like, weird xenophobic food racism.
Yeah, all about, yeah, like Chinese food or
Indian
Mexican food.
Indian food, all
food,
this,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, we even had like criticism of cheese being nerdy. Like, what is going on here with the boomers being like, oh, food is very specific and can be racist and nerdy. Like, what the fuck is, what are we doing here?
Let's take a trip down memory lane to the 80s when everyone was on cocaine. So surprisingly, food didn't sound good.
Yeah, and they were all lead poisoned. So
they were all lead poisoned, so yeah, there's that. Also, Dexatrim. Do you remember that Dexatrim was a thing? People just advertise trucker speed on TV as a diet
speed,
aid. Yeah.
Wild times.
Yeah. It was a strange era.
Yeah, good thing we're normal now.
Oh yeah, everything's really fucking on point right now. It's our ducks are in a row. Everybody knows what's up. It's good.
We're not misbranding, misselling pharmaceuticals for the wrong purposes anymore or any of that shit.
What?
Hell,
I've never heard the like.
Man, what do you think is going to happen when all these people that are on the what is that new like miracle weight loss drug shit. What is that stuff called?
Oh, the diabetes drug that people are using for weight loss?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And like eating like 400 calories a day.
Oh, there's already been repercussions of that. Yeah.
There's that lady that's like got permanent diarrhea and stuff. But like, what are we going to find out about people that are like, oh, you're not getting nearly enough calories, nutrients, minerals, vitamins, anything, because you're literally not eating enough food.
I don't understand. Like, listen, stop whatever diet you're on and just eat fucking food. Just
eat real food.
Food.
And go on a walk. Just go on a fucking walk. Even if it's around your house or apartment building, just walk around, get in the sun a little bit, eat some fucking food. Come on.
Yeah, sun is good. That's vitamin D3. You need that.
Yep. Praise Jesus. That's right.
Praise
That's
Jesus.
Right. Craziness, dude. Craziness. Yep. Well, man, it's not been a week where I've had a lot of time to watch stuff, but I did watch a movie this week called A Starry Eye.
Starry Eye.
That one, I seen it. And, dude, I'll tell you what. Ball is beautiful.
She does go bald. And honestly, Alex S.O. looks
good. She pulls it off, actually.
Yeah, she pulls it off. Yeah.
She really does, man. She really does. Every now and then, man, you know, there's some people out there that can really flat out pull it off. I mean, you got your Jason Stathams and cats like that, obviously, your Vin Diesels and so on. But, man, there's some ladies that can rock a no-hair look and just look fucking excellent, man.
Natalie Portman, Karen Gillan. Yeah. Yeah, we've seen it in the past.
Plenty of them. I wonder if we're that type.
I'd sure love to find out. Do you think we could?
Maybe we could ask someone like 5 questions and get it over with real fast.
Oh, God. I'd love to do that. So let's ask the witches and wizards over at BuzzFeed, I reckon.
Like we do. Like we do, man. You know? We're going to ask the witchers and wizards.
Richers and
wizards. Richers. Over here at BuzzFeed. I just want to know, should I shave my head?
Yeah.
We're going to take a quiz and find out.
In the Preview Palace. Welcome to the Preview Palace.
There it is. This is by Witch or Wizard Bobbert. I think this is by Lauren Bobbert.
Lauren
wrote this quiz,
Bobbert.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, God. You know what? Maybe this will have a Beetlejuice question.
Or a handjob question. I don't know.
I hope it has a handjob question because I have questions myself.
All right, Steve, let me ask you our first question here. How long is your hair?
Okay.
Is it? I have never cut my hair.
Okay.
Shoulder length, past my shoulders, or is it pretty short?
I mean, it's past my shoulders. I don't often cut my hair.
Yeah.
But we do, you know, do trims now and then. But past my shoulders, I guess, is accurate.
You use a Flobee at home, right?
Yeah, I like to Flobee my hair.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Give your hair the old flow job, huh?
Yeah. Listen.
Flow job.
I thought we were going to learn about hand jobs, but we're learning about flow jobs, and that's interesting too.
Man, do you think that fucking teenagers are trying to stick their dicks in vacuum hoses like they did when we were kids, or not?
You know what?
They still doing that?
The number of teenagers who stick their dicks in a vacuum has gone down precipitously.
You think so?
With the invention of the pocket pussy.
I mean, appeal is still there, right?
Listen, I don't know if you understand this. There's an invention out there that you can fuck, but you can also just pretend like it's a flashlight, which is a normal thing to keep under your bed.
And flashlights are quite erotic.
Yeah, so
this
also...
is appealing.
Anyway.
Wow.
So how long's your hair?
Well, mine's past my shoulders for sure. I'm
That's
a long
right.
hair, hashtag don't care kind of person, so
That's
mine's
right.
quite long. It has been since I was probably maybe an 18-year-old,
yeah.
man. As soon as I got out under my parents' wings, I was like, long hair, don't care.
Yeah, boy, BuzzFeed, hashtag jokes, we are up to date.
Damn, dude. What do we got next?
How have you been keeping busy? Okay. Binge. Is this like a during COVID times quiz?
It might be. Yeah.
Oh,
May
5th,
2020.
2020.
So, yeah. Correct.
Oh, how have I been keeping busy?
This question reeks of COVID times
yeah.
for sure.
Let's see. Binging Netflix, going for walks, taking up a new hobby, reading.
Well, I'll tell you this, Steve. I have actually been reading more lately. So, I mentioned last week on the show how I'm continuing to fight my social media / phone doom scroll addiction, and I started putting my phone on grayscale mode
for
99%
of
the day.
Which you said was hideous. Yeah.
It is atrocious. I mean, my reaction to it is visceral. Like, I cannot stand to look at my phone.
Yeah.
I got my weekly like screen time report, you know, the other day like you do. My phone usage was down like 86% from the last week.
Wowzers.
Like way the fuck down. I hate it. Like if you want to start living social media free, fucking do that. It's awesome. And you know what else? I've not missed it a goddamn bit. I've not gone to bed one day being like, man, I didn't get enough scroll time in today.
That shit. I absolutely agree with you. I try to stay away from it.
Yeah, I've been like reading books and magazines on the toilet. Hell yeah.
That's awesome. I've been going for walks a lot recently because the weather's been nice. I like to go for a walk, you know, before work and then at lunch. Like to go for a walk, just like to, you know, intake the nature. It's a real beautiful city, Portland. Don't know if you're aware of that. We got trees and whatnot.
So, trees and whatnot.
You know how those are. You walk around, you're like, ooh, it smells nice.
And they're like, are you an orc?
Yeah, okay, yes, the trees here are alive, and I have been meaning to mention that, that they do talk to you, and they ask if you're an orc a lot. That's like number one, their first question. Guess they don't like orcs a lot.
Yeah, they're kind of racist like that. Do they pay taxes?
The trees? You know, they try to, but it takes an awful long time.
I bet they get those carbon credits and stuff, right? They're like, oh, I'm fucking sucking up your carbon dioxide and making
oxygen. They also get fucking suck taxes credits, yeah. Because the way that they suck up the CO2 and they fuck, you know, by dropping their acorns or whatever.
Yeah, all that tree skeet is just everywhere this time of year.
It's all skeet, 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 they say.
Whenever you go on a walk, are you listening to anything? You put on a podcast or music or anything? Or you just listen to nature?
Yeah, I want to listen to nature. Yeah, because I listen to, you know, I'll listen to a podcast on the way to work or whatever. But, you know, I like to just kind of relax. Just kind of get the mind nice and, you know, kind of blank. It works well.
All right, then, Walt Whitman.
Right? I know.
All right.
Hold on. I just wanted to recite Leaves of Grass from memory. Hold on just a second.
Okay, if you listen close, you can hear the fucking placid waves of Walden Pond out here.
That's right.
Fucking snooty hippie. Get the fuck out of here.
Ben, pick an image. God
well, this is not good. Yeah,
this isn't good for the podcast.
For an audio podcast, no. This isn't great. I know which one I'm not picking.
Yeah, is it the spider?
Yeah, I'm not
picking that. Yeah, I don't want to hang out with that guy, I guess. Uh-uh. So the other three are just kind of abstract. Yeah, there's like a kind of neon light. There's something that I don't know, maybe looks like snow or rabbits. I don't know.
Something. Yeah, I don't know.
Then there's silver face guy.
I think silver face guy is my guy. That's your image? I see myself in him. Yeah, sometimes my head feels like a ice cube or something, and I put my hands on it, and I'm like, ah!
That's a good call.
Like that honestly. Guy.
Yeah, which when one you feel picking? That way, do that. I'm going to pick the neon lights. I like a neon light. They're fun.
Okay. All right. Steve, what thing have you done the most during quarantine? Yeah, 2020 fucking quiz here. Good thing I gave this a cursory glance before I decided to do this. All right, so let me rephrase it for the times. What did you do the most during quarantine? Okay. Did you rearrange your furniture, put a puzzle together, FaceTime or Zoom with friends, or cried a lot?
This reeks of early quarantine so much, too.
Right? Oh, yeah, like, man.
We hadn't even figured out yet. Like, well, fucking watch Tiger King, obviously. You know?
Or how long this is going to last.
You know? Right. What thing of these four did I
of these most, four?
I probably fucking FaceTimed or Zoomed with friends.
Yeah. I'm gonna say same for me too. Yeah. I know we avoid the same answers, but I did. Like we had, man. I honestly, God damn it, I can't help it. I get nostalgic about some of the times where we just had to like think harder and get creative and find out ways to hang out with our friends.
Sure.
We do like those. What was that like Zoom game app thing that we did with a bunch of people where it was like you could play all kinds of cool interactive games with a bunch of friends?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
There was like Snap or something like that. I can't remember what it was called. But there was just so many cool ways to try to stay in touch. I loved seeing during that time period the way the human condition tried to fulfill its basic needs of creating bonds between people and entertainment and all that shit. So yeah, I get nostalgic about that shit.
Yeah, man. I mean our ice cream sundae screaming chat and ice cream sundae really. I mean ice cream sundae didn't even exist before the quarantine. So we really bonded a lot during that period on Discord.
Totally.
And yeah, so yeah, I think yeah, finding fun ways to get still interact. That was a valuable period, I guess. Then it was like, oh gosh, this is the only way to interact.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
And of course, both of us say that from the lofty place of privilege of not being people that were essential workers that still sure, had to go to clock yeah. in at a public job and risk their fucking yeah. lives and health. Yeah. Like, neither of us
yeah.
had to do that. So we can be a little bit nostalgic about it because we weren't personally facing fucking hell on earth every yeah. day we went to work. So
absolutely.
You know?
And lastly, Ben, do you think you should shave your head? Hell yeah, I'd look awesome. Shouldn't you be telling me that? Question mark. Maybe IDK might look cool. I think I would look like an egg.
Man, you know, I've always been a person that is very attached to my hair. I've right. always identified as a person who has a head of hair on them.
And, yeah. Okay.
I'm reaching a 40 year this year. I still uh-huh. have quite a lot of hair. I'm not that mad about it, honestly.
Okay.
This is more than I expected to have. I do fear the day that I will lose my hair. That has been like a concern of mine, I think, for at least 10 years or so now. Honestly.
You're positive that's gonna happen?
I'm not, though. Honestly. I mean, okay. I think, dude, the fact that like I'm sitting here turning 40 this year
yeah.
and I don't have like the hair yarmulke, the skin yarmulke
right.
rather. I mean, yeah, my forehead is bigger than it used to be, but that's because I've got smarter.
Duh.
The IQ has to go somewhere, and it's in the forehead. So.
And it normally goes into the forehead.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, yeah, my hairline's come back a little
yeah.
bit. But I think if I've made it to 40, I'm probably cool. I still got a lot of hair. My dick works. I'm not that mad about it.
That's how I fucking feel, my dude.
You know? So I'm worried that I would look like an egg, though. Like, I've never shaved my head. I think I had like a buzz cut once when I was like mm-hmm. 5 or 6. I remember doing it on a whim
yeah.
back then, and that's it. I've never really seen the shape of my head as a fully developed adult. I don't know what it would look like. So I do fear that I look like an egg.
I have shaved my head with clippers, not bald, but all the way down as an adult. And I have a weird shaped head, but not egg shaped.
So you know what's lurking under there.
I know
good.
What's lurking under there. It's not terrible. I'm fine with it. But also, I'm not gonna go bald unless something mysterious happens. Like
you
a
got thick
curse.
Hair, dude.
I do. I got a big old thick head of hair, and it's not going anywhere. So I'm just gonna say, shouldn't you be telling me that?
Yeah, that's fair.
Then see where that goes, Ben. What happened? What happened to yours? What does it say?
Well, the answer for should I shave my head is not yet. Hold your horses. Having a shaved head might seem like a cool idea, but when it comes to actually doing it, you'll probably chicken out. That's okay. Maybe just stick to your current hairstyle and come back to the idea of shaving your head later. P.S. I don't actually know you, so feel free to not listen to my advice.
Wow. Oh, man. You know what? That's wild, considering what I got was this. Not yet. Hold your horses.
My God, dude.
Having a
we
shaved head
one
might
common
seem
answer.
Like...
What?
Yeah, come on, witches and wizards over at BuzzFeed in the early pandemic. Do better.
Do better already. Damn it, dude. That was barely worth turning my phone back to color mode for. I'm going to go to my... I'm going to go to my iPhone settings, then to display. Wait, no, not that. I'm going to go to accessibility.
Okay.
Then I'm going to display and text type.
Right.
Then I'm going to go to color filters and turn it back onto grayscale.
Right.
That way my phone looks like a fucking abysmal pit of depression.
Is there,
I
when
hate it.
You turn it to grayscale, does it also change the way anything sounds so that it sounds like it's a wax cylinder coming through
does.
A tinny horn?
Whenever I get a phone call, my ringtone is the soundtrack to Requiem for a Dream. Da-do, 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 da-do. It plays that as my ringtone.
That's bad. Wow.
It's very bad. I don't want to even remotely look at my phone. Horrible.
All right.
But in a good way.
In a good way, yeah.
It's beneficially bad. This is what they call hormetic medicine. It is bad stuff that's good for you.
Hormetic.
That's the term. Yeah. It's like beneficial stress is what it is. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. Actual thing. So there we go. Well, now I'm back in grayscale mode. I want to talk about a movie. I want to talk about Starry Eye from about 10 years ago.
I like your, it's just like you're guesstimating. Well,
yeah,
you're pretty fucking accurate because it premiered March 8th, 2014.
That's about right.
That's about 10 years ago.
About right.
Yeah.
About right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Right. That's right. It's a pretty edumacated guess right there. I just seen this for the first time the other night. Did you see it for the first time the other night?
No, I saw it way back in the day.
You had.
Mentioned it on the podcast.
You told me this mm-hmm. before. Yeah, that you liked this one.
Yep. This is one I really liked when I first saw it. And still really like, but it definitely, when I saw it the first time, was, I didn't know what to expect. Had really no idea what I was going into. And this time I hadn't seen it in a long time, so I didn't remember a lot of things, but I did remember, the important stuff, but I was still kind of blown away by Alex Esso's physical performance and things like that. Yeah.
She's committed, dude.
She's killing it, yeah.
Very committed. And this, of course, is a Patreon submission into the Smoking Bowl by one of our lovely $5 or more patrons.
Jasmine Leland, shout out. Woo! Yeah. Yeah, we're finally getting to it, and I'm glad because, you know, there's a lot to talk about here. This is a movie that came out 3 years before the Me Too movement, which obviously the Me Too movement was not the origination of the concept that actresses
the
might be sexually harassed in Hollywood.
A woman ever said they didn't have it right and were getting a bad deal in life. It's the first time it ever happened.
But
it's never happened.
That is the first time it really hit a lot of people what's going on. So this movie kind of, you know, precedes that. And is a movie made partially through Kickstarter funding and clearly not connected with any major studio that is saying pretty, you know, openly that this is kind of Hollywood.
Why in the world did New Line not pick this up?
I wonder why. I wonder why Harvey Weinstein didn't want to do this movie. Yeah.
I got no idea, man.
Right. It's
some kind of bias at work.
Yeah, it's definitely a movie that is, it's showing people, it's not showing everyone in Hollywood. Like, she's not reflective of every person, and her friend group is not reflective of every person in Hollywood. But what it is showing is how people who are a little bit toxic in Hollywood can oftentimes form friend groups that kind of just rely on each other to drag each other down and to not really like support each other, and it's a bad toxic environment to be in, and unfortunately also the gatekeepers, the people there you know, deciding who gets to be a star, use their position of power to abuse people.
And they flush kids down the toilet in a pizza restaurant, and they drink on the adrenochrome, and that's how they're evil.
Well, yeah, because the kids get scared, and they produce a lot of adrenochrome, yeah.
Yes, that's what this is about.
Totally scientific thing.
This is showing how all of that works for all to see.
Well, I mean, you know, it really is, I think, equating... Because, like, you know, we've got this cult that is, they worship Astraeus, which is, was it the Greek god of the stars?
Mm-hmm.
And really what they're, I feel like the movie's getting at is stardom, is that the entertainment industry worships stardom. It both creates and exploits stardom.
That this finally throws the Greeks under the bus. Finally somebody. Finally somebody.
Finally. That's
yeah, they got their cult
Greek
on
wedding
stuff.
Trying to trick us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my big fat Greek movie project. That's what this movie. That's the alternate title, right?
Right. But yeah, I think the central idea is that Hollywood, you know, both creates and worships and exploits stardom and sucks the absolute life out of those that it gets its hooks into. We'll take everything and leave you entirely used up or whatever. But we'll completely transform you into this other evil being. But the thing is that she, the whole time, has choices along the way. And that's something that, I read the writer-directors saying that they really wanted along the way for her to be making choices. So that we see that, in fact, she's not being turned into a monster. She wants to be a monster. she wants that. She is after it and will stop at nothing to get it.
Certainly seems that way. Yeah.
So it's interesting because I think this fits into like a category Anna and I were talking about of degenerating girl characters. Like they're just like falling apart essentially through time. You got things like Jennifer's Body. Where you're watching someone like maybe in some way victorious in their mind, they're getting what they want, but really everything's going downhill for them, body-wise.
There's a billion examples. Amy Winehouse. I mean, any example that just are given everything they want and literally fall apart. Yeah.
Sure. It's a good... I really love that this is an opportunity in a horror movie for Alex Esso to be gross.
She is the centerpiece of the movie. Yeah. She is on screen like 95% of the flick. I'm trying to think of any shots that don't have her in it. I mean, she is absolutely the focus this entire time.
Right.
And yeah, she is a conventionally attractive actress that... I didn't even realize was fucking Wendy Torrance in Dr. Sleep. The fuck?
Yeah, Alex Esso, she's in some what's his name? Oh, that guy,
Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan. Yeah,
she's a bunch of Flanagan stuff, man. Yeah. And you're right, she is this like gorgeous young lady in this that fully commits to just getting to be downright disgusting. Kind of like what we talk about with what is her name? Samara Weaving, where it's like, she's gorgeous and also committed to being in disgusting shit, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
man,
absolutely.
She really doubles down on this role, dude.
Yeah, she, all the makeup effects and whatnot to make her look like she's just falling apart and whatnot, and her body is slowly deteriorating, deteriorating girl, that's what we were calling it, not degenerating girl. I'm sorry, Anna. Anyway, she's just totally deteriorating, but like she's also having those scenes where like her nails are coming out, and then she's also like doing a lot of like physical stuff and like writhing on the ground and things. Like
she's having a hard time, man. She's having a hard time. I read some stuff where the directors are saying that they were kind of inspired by the performances in Possession little bit, which I can't remember. Have you watched that movie yet?
No, I haven't.
Fuck me, dude. Like, after you watch Possession, you'll get it, because that movie is 2 hours of people just absolutely falling apart in every fucking way. I can definitely see the Possession influence in this movie in terms of her performance and her... What was the term you just used? Disintegration?
Deteriorating girl.
Deterioration. Yeah, for sure in this. So, you'll dig that whenever you watch Possession.
Yeah, and I think, just from reading some of the Letterboxd reviews, I also got that, some people were honestly just like, your friends really suck. I'm cool with you killing them. And that, I know that, that you kind of felt everybody's hateable in this.
I did.
I think so too.
Yeah. That is one thing about this movie that I honestly didn't love, is that there were no characters in here that were likable. Like her friend / roommate Tracy, she seems to be about one of the only people in this that isn't totally shitty, and she still gets like kiss of death in the movie. But in this flick, there are a lot of just very unlikable, parasitic, toxic ass characters. There's nobody to root for in this.
Well, but why would you need that? Name a likable character in Reservoir Dogs.
Sure. I get that. Now, here's the thing, though. I think that especially in a story like this, where we're seeing a character who will give anything for their chance at stardom, I think having a little bit of background as for why they have that need so deep in their psyche would be appreciated. Like, I even think about, like, the Suspiria remake, where we get to see a little bit of background about her growing up on that, like, it's like a Mennonite community or something, right? Mm. A definite no-dance community. And it kind of shows you her inspiration as for, like, why she would want to get out there and perform and be the center of attention. I wish that I knew a little bit more about why our main character here has this desire for stardom. I wish I knew the motivation better.
Why do you have a desire for stardom?
I didn't get enough attention as a kid.
Okay.
That's it.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, it definitely, I think there's always just the same drives, right? Like, that's kind of what they're showing with these characters all being friends, that, like, they all seem to have the same drive, and it's narcissism in some way. Like, mm-hmm. her mm-hmm. seems to be very specifically, like, a drive to be a star above all things. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't just want attention. They want the attention. They want all media turned toward them. And I think if there was a good character among them, it wouldn't be believable. Why would that person hang out with these people?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Because they all have the exact same interest. Otherwise, they wouldn't be hanging out with each other.
Right. And, like, you know, if she had, like, a good coworker at Big Taters. This movie is funny. I know. I saw people saying this movie's, like, so dark. And it's like, I think you're missing a lot of black humor in this. Like, the fact that she, like, the role that she sells her soul for is really bad.
That's one
role.
Thing that stood out for me. I
it's
mean,
funny.
Like, the what is the name of the movie? The Silver Scream?
The Silver
or some shit?
Scream, yes.
I was like, this sounds like bullshit. Like, there's no way that this is going to be any good. Well, and she is selling her soul for, like, a garbage
role. And the
role.
Scene that she reads isn't good. Like,
no.
I don't think that she, like, first, Alex Esso is a good actress. So, in the scenes when she's not acting, she's acting amazing. And then in the scenes when she's acting mediocre. And I love that. That's great.
True. That is like a multi-tiered, multi-level performance where you're talking about someone who is a good actress playing an actress who's kind of mediocre. That's
right.
Impressive.
And that's the thing, is that not that she's bad. She's not bad. She's fine. But that stardom doesn't require talent. And that is interesting, that, like, to really think of Hollywood as full of star makers, and to look at so many stars we've had in the past and look at, you know, where they go and where they end up depending on their talent. You can be an absolute star without talent, and you can maintain that stardom for a period of time, and you will have lived your dream.
I can't remember where I heard it just recently. It was on a podcast, or maybe I overheard something Kate was listening to. I can't remember what it was. But somebody was talking about how, like, the most important marketable asset that you have right now is shamelessness.
Yeah. Yes.
And it is. It's
and that's
being
what this
shameless
movie's
is
about, right?
Thing.
Like, she is sexually assaulted. So, warning for that. If you haven't seen this movie and you're listening to the description, she is sexually assaulted.
He puts his
hand on her thigh and slowly goes up toward her crotch. Yeah.
It is not like it's not one of those horrible, glorified, let's make it hot sort of things.
No,
it's not that at all. I'm glad they did not go that route.
Yeah.
And it's mostly unseen.
Yes. And it's very much, she immediately is like, no. And she's like, let me out of here. And she leaves and she tells her friends, and all of her friends agree it's disgusting. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But she goes
and
back.
And then she changes her mind. Yeah.
Right. Yes. And this is not to blame her for going back. She's going back. She was offered this role for favors. This is exactly what we dealt with in Me Too. That does not make it her fault that she goes through with it, because she is a power imbalance entirely. But she shouldn't go through with it. No one in their right mind would go through with it.
Sure.
She must have stardom at all costs. So she still does go through with it. And that leads to this monstrous change. And I want to just compare it kind of to, like, you know, because I can see how somebody could see that and be like, oh, is this movie victim blaming?
Right.
Yeah. But I just want to compare it to say, like, you know, look at the stuff that keeps coming out with this Nickelodeon producer and whatnot. And
ooh, man. Yeah, ooh, that documentary series that just rough. Came out.
Yeah.
It's like Quiet on the Set or something. I think yeah. That's what it's called. I've seen a few people in our group talk about it. And I'm like, yeah. As a kid who grew up in the prime Nickelodeon era, I cannot help but be curious to want to see that fucking car crash of a story.
Yeah, but it's so devastating.
But that's like, disgusting.
Yeah.
I can't think of a mood I'd be in where I'm like, I'm ready to watch this story about a fucking pedophile that made millions of dollars. Like, I can't think of a time I want to see that.
You also have the accusations against Brian Peck. And you've had people come out in defense of these people. And there's no questioning they did what they did, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the names you see come out and defend, every time.
Dude, just today, we woke up to the news of this, like, stuff about P. Diddy's estate being raided for sex trafficking possibility.
And these are all open. Not, like, people in the industry knew about shit that was going on
yeah.
for years. And shit's finally coming to a head. It's just that
the... Quit being gross, people.
Right.
Quit
the industry is such that... People who start out not wanting to be monsters or whatever, they sell their soul, they get locked in with some people who do some bad shit, and they can't let that person burn because that person keeps their secrets and keeps, you know, and may have victimized them. And sure. All sorts of, like, you know, the fact is that, like, if you have an industry where you keep having these revelations over and over and over, it's not a revelation to the people in the industry because it's obviously happening so much.
Yeah, clearly they know.
Yeah. You know. And I did see some, you know, critiques of this saying, like, well, like, you know, the kind of message of this is so obvious and overt. And it's like, well, yeah, but we did had a whole movement like 3 years after this telling people, like, hey, this is happening, and a whole bunch of people were like, what? So right. Clearly the message being overt doesn't exactly hit everyone. It just hits the people who are up to date on what's going on in Hollywood, and that the fact that that's kind of an open secret is pretty disgusting, right?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah,
absolutely. So yeah,
I think it's a movie just trying to expose that disgustingness in a lot of ways. You know, I think people debate how perfectly well it does that. Mm-hmm. I think it does a good job.
I'll say, like, the allegory here of if you want to make it in Hollywood, you have to sell your soul. What's the movie about? If you want to make it in Hollywood, you have to sell your soul. It's like, that's literally what happens in the movie. It's kind of like saying, like, I'd like to make a movie that's like an allegory about what would happen if we brought dinosaurs back. Jurassic Park. It's like, well, that's literally what it's about. Like, it is very, very, very on the nose.
Yeah, it's about selling your soul in a terrible industry with, you know, horrible prospects, but the actual end result being stardom, whatever mm-hmm. that means, and for however long that lasts, you know.
Yeah,
it's a bleak outlook. It's not. It's very dark. It does present like an alternative where, you know, the what's his name, the guy that she ends up, like, kind of liking, I guess. Danny. That's right.
Yeah, I was going to say Donnie. Danny.
Like, he's like, we should just make a movie. And that's like, yes. That's exactly right. And that's what, you know, that's what kind of is going on with this movie, because it was, you know, partially.
But even he is like fucking the actress that wants the role.
He, yes. And it shows that like it's kind of saying like we're not saying independent cinema is better. We're saying something's fucked up all over Hollywood. Like
there seems to be, I think, even an overarching message that it's beyond Hollywood. I think it's saying that the males in control power dynamic will always lead to abuse of women. Because it seems like in this movie, we have three different ways in which she, our main character here, interacts with men. She's begging for her job at Big Taters, where she's obviously being sexually exploited. We have her trying to get this job with this independent male producer where he's just fucking chicks to get the main roles. And then obviously the satanic cult angle where she is also fucking dudes to get a part and get her big break in stardom.
Yeah.
It seems to be like patriarchy is the real bad guy here overall. Well, it's like not just the satanic cult. It's like, well, it seems like males in control. This was where it will always lead to.
I don't know. I mean, it really, yeah. I mean, that's definitely in there. It's definitely also like capitalist exploitation. Because, like, I think there's also the element, you know, like, and this is not to say this is not still about patriarchy, but the fact that the, you know, one of the people involved in her, you know, audition processes is a woman. And that, I think, still calling out patriarchy, but saying that that's endemic in the Hollywood machine, that women aren't going to keep you safe from the sexual assaults either. So yeah, I mean, that's still part of a patriarchal machine, that some women uphold that as well. But it's also, yeah, exploitation overall, like, and she buys into it. She's willing to be exploited for stardom, but before she
seemed like a willing participant.
Yeah, before that, I mean, like her job at Big Taters. I love that portrayal, because I don't feel like the movie puts any judgment on that job. It puts judgment on the manager, because none of the other people who work there are shown to be bad. None of the other women working there are shown to be like ditzy or anything like that. It's just that the exploitation is clearly still there, with the manager like staring at her ass all the time, or like talking about her sexually with other workers and whatnot. And so like, and then also just the financial exploitation of like, hey, go out there and sell sex so people will buy tater tots. I mean,
I guess so. Two things about Big Taters. For one, I want to get me a pair of them beer suds leggings that they're wearing to
those
wear on stage.
Those are so cool.
Banger. They're fucking sick.
Yeah.
So if anybody knows where to find those, I want me some.
Uh-huh.
Two, I really hate that like months ago, before I even watched this movie, on one of our random episodes, I spilled my beans about all my other body part themed restaurants I want there to be to go along with places like Twin Peaks, Hooters, Tilted Kill, all these, you know, kind of restaurants. I talked about Elbows, which is a sexually exploitive restaurant all about elbows that serves macaroni and all those. That should have been our Preview Palaces episode.
Absolutely.
Really wish I would have kept that in the chamber.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know that Big Taters was coming down the turnpike. How could I have known?
See you later, Tater Gator.
See you later, Tater Gator, man.
I think, yeah, a lot of the, because even though Pat Healy, who plays the manager there, even though he's playing him gross, Pat Healy's still charming and funny. So
who is he? I know him from something.
The Innkeepers, I think, is one we've done with him in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Holy shit. Of course.
But he's in a ton of stuff. Yeah. Pat Healy's great. Yeah, I think like those scenes work really well, and they work with what I was saying earlier about like the movie having all this dark humor in it. Like the entire concept of Big Taters is, I mean, it's clearly like a Hooters style restaurant, but like that's funny. Big Taters
is boobs
funny.
Taters.
Exactly.
Taters.
I kind of love it. It's so weird.
So bizarre, man. And then there's, like, humor-wise, there's also that moment way later in the movie after she has, like, stabbed that girl and the boyfriend comes out of the bathroom. He's like, "Saw, dude." And he, like, goes to pee. Like, he doesn't even notice.
Yeah.
That was kind of a weird beat for me where I was like, what?
Yeah, I think like it's just like that this friend group, they're so like self-involved and like, because she's been fighting this chick in the kitchen. There's been screaming and stuff, you know? And, you know, they're all drunk and not interested in the sleep or whatever. So, yeah, I think that, you know, I could see how that does seem like a real weird beat right after, like, she just stabbed this girl several times.
Totally. That's also, like, when the horror really starts. Like, the horror is kind of a late reveal in this movie. Like, the first...
We got some body horror up to that point, but this is when it gets... Yeah, this is when it gets real fucky, yeah.
Definitely, man. So, having that little humor beat, like, right when stuff actually starts getting really intense was kind of odd for me, but memorable, I guess I can say that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Gore. Dude, when this thing gets gory...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Up to that point in the movie, I had not been all that impressed in terms of like the horror aspects of this horror film. But man, when it got to like the killings and stuff.
Yeah. It's brutal.
Dude, especially like when she smashes that chick's head with that dumbbell. I'm like, I guess I just watched a snuff film. Like, I watched somebody get killed now.
It was really good. Yeah.
Horrible. Oh, dude. The way that was shot and edited was really gruesome. That felt like Faces of Death, like Rotten.com shit. Like,
oh yeah,
that felt really real. I didn't like that.
Yeah,
I mean, I liked it because it was impressive.
Yeah,
but it was like
absolutely
repulsive. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think like I like all the body horror stuff. I like the kills. The cheek slash looked really good.
That looked really good. Yeah. Whenever she slashed her and then like it, the wound kind of opened, then the blood started gushing out when she put her hand up to it. That was very convincing.
Yeah.
Even the squirming around with the bag over the head was very convincing.
Oh, God. Yeah. Brutal. Yeah. Just brutal.
I'll say too, man, for like a movie that was made on the cheap, I'm really stoked that they didn't do like CGI blood, like those copy and paste blood slashes and shit that you see in all the cheap horror movies, you know?
Right. Yeah. I
was
agree.
Impressed they didn't resort to anything.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, it all looked practical to me.
Yes. And I know that they had considered doing the maggots when she puked up the maggots as CGI, but Alex Esso insisted on doing it practical. So she had maggots in her mouth. Yeah.
Gross.
But
they
look
like mealworms. I think they were mealworms instead of maggots.
Right.
This is a Hollywood thing. Every time they want to show maggots, they're actually mealworms.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't know why they do this all the time. Maggots are like little tiny little dudes, and mealworms are like more like an inch or so long, segmented, bandy little worms. I don't know why they do it all the time. I mean, it's still disgusting and effective, obviously.
Gross,
but you see it and you go, maggots. And it's like, no, it's not. I don't know why we do that.
I wonder if it's a cleanliness thing. They know what the mealworms have eaten. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. I don't know, man.
Ugh.
Maggots, just baby flies.
That's
much
what
cuter when you call them that. They're just baby flies.
It's still disgusting, but
so gross.
Yeah.
I stole that. Kevin Smith talks about that on a podcast. It's much cuter if you just call them baby flies. That's what they are.
Well, everything's cuter if you just call it like a baby, you know? Like if you call, like a roll, if you call it a baby bread. Boom.
Oh, that's adorable. You're right. You're right. It's true, man. Yeah, whenever this thing does ramp up to gore and stuff, it is really impressive. I can't really find any fault with any of those effects. The like kiss of death she does on Tracy is a little confusing. I can't tell if she is like Dracula-ing her, or if she's like drowning her in blood from her body, like she's spitting it in. I don't know. That's one of those things that happens in movies, in horror movies, pretty frequently. The kiss of death.
Right.
Where people are kissing and then there's blood and someone's screaming and the other person's calm. I'm like, I still don't know what's happening here, though.
Right.
It's like when I see scissoring. I don't know what's happening. Really? Does this happen in real life? I don't think it does. I'm not convinced.
I'm not even kidding you. This is the third time I've talked about scissoring in the past few days.
Well,
with three different people, and I didn't bring it up. any of here we are. Time, so.
Here we are again, man. There's something in the cosmic consciousness right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, everybody's scissoring, like, scissoring. Is that really a thing
truth
anyone does?
Myth? I don't know. I don't know about it. Yeah. It seems like bashing stuff together to me. I don't know if that works.
Yeah, yeah. It really is. It's like this idea. Like, I imagine when they first tried gay porn, they were like, I don't know, smack your dicks together.
Just bash them together.
The guys are like, I have a few other ideas that might work.
That's just sword fighting, dude. That's just sword fighting. Classic move. It's a
yeah,
classic move.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so like that's the only effect where I was kind of pulled out where I'm like, oh, we're doing this again. Like I've seen this in other movies and I still don't really know what's happening.
Right. Yeah. It could be any number of things. I hope though that it was like a sort of like fly like liquid that was eating her insides or mm-hmm. like, you know, like liquefying them so you could suck them back out as nutrients.
Ew. It's quality protein, man.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Quality stuff, I guess. Ew, so nasty, man. Yeah, there's definitely some gross stuff in this. It is a late bloomer for when that stuff happens.
Yeah, it does take a little bit, but it's not a long movie overall. But
no, it's not. Yeah. It's only, what, like an hour and a half, right?
A little bit over, but yeah, not too much. And yeah, like... It does. I would agree that the middle doesn't have a ton of action. You know, we have her.
Dude, there's this like rhythm of like party. I'm falling
right.
apart.
Yeah.
Party.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely. Really sick. Like mm-hmm. there's this rhythm in the middle of the movie that just goes between those two different things several times in a row that
right.
felt like a lot of padding to me. Like there's multiple pool scenes in this movie. Multiple.
Yep. There are. Yeah. I mean. That's, I have an idea, maybe, and this is just, I haven't fully worked it out, but kind of thought of it. Anytime in a movie, somebody takes a drug, we have to question what, if anything that happens after it is real.
That's true. Yeah.
She takes
that's
a drug
a thing,
at
yeah.
that pool party. And then, as you said, yeah, after that, her life becomes just alternating between parties and pools and deteriorating, you know, feeling almost drug trippy.
Yeah,
so
totally, man.
Is it possible that this is just a drug trip where she is playing out her fantasy in her mind, and that it's not real? This isn't what really happened, you know.
Entirely possible,
right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the minute in a movie you have someone take a drug. It is kind of understood. Everything after they take a drug might not be happening.
Right. And all the shit really takes off after that party where he gives her a mysterious pill, you know. So
yeah.
There's that possibility. Though I don't know that there's any indication at the end that would like, you know, if there had been like a little bit of like wavy fading or something near the end or whatever, but though that final bit does just feel entirely dreamlike when she's like, you know, it puts on the wig and now she's in her like star gear and she feels like a star, but like, you know, the movie hasn't even been shot yet. like that,
yeah.
that's like
how
dream
is she a star
logic.
Now right
yeah
yeah, but with the green eyes. Like, they really made a point to show us that
right.
her eyes were this, like, emerald green out of
yeah.
nowhere.
Well, I think that may just be the old traditional, you know, the...
Envy.
Envy, yeah, yeah. Like, she wants this so bad. She's so, like, envious of those who have it.
I thought they were trying to show us that she was just a common street whore like that green M&M. I thought that's what they were saying. Just
you know,
a common
I miss
street
when
whore.
She was sexy, though. Like, I'm with the
for
conservatives
Biden.
On this one, yeah. Like, for we woke. Rarely agree, the conservatives and I, but
they blew it.
I wanted to fuck that M&M. They shouldn't have changed it.
Obviously, you know?
Because when you get M&Ms, you normally are horny, right? So
yeah,
you're
of
like,
course.
Oh, man, I gotta pick one that's, you know, fuckable.
green. Yeah, so you're right. There is the question of like what all of this is real. And one thing about this movie that I'm still trying to decide if I like or not, because
okay.
I can kind of sit back and rationalize other movies that have done this and I liked them, and other movies that haven't done this and I like them. I feel like the movie shows us through very not subtle clues very early on in the movie that this production crew for Astraeus, what's it called?
Astraeus.
Productions is like a satanic cult. Like, it shows us their necklaces. It shows us the scarification or burn mark on the back of dude's hand. I feel like it shows us so early on that this is a cult type scenario that she's getting herself involved in. It is sort of the opposite of the Rosemary's Baby scenario, where you don't really find out till the very end that, like, oh shit, like, she's got herself mixed up with a cult, or like Hereditary style, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like it doesn't try to do that at all. It shows us early on, which in a way could be something that I like. I've mentioned on the show many times how I love how, like, in movies, like in The House of the Devil, how we know that the main character is in trouble and they don't.
Right.
Sometimes I really like that. Sometimes, like, honestly, in the case of this movie, I sort of wish it would have been a little bit more conspiratorial. I sort of wish that the reveal would have been later. And I'm trying to quantify why.
The thing is, if there had been a reveal later, the movie would be about the satanic cult rather than about her. It's about her making the decision and being this person. Like, it's not about the cult. So,
I mean, I feel like Rosemary's Baby is still about Rosemary.
I don't know if a movie where everybody pushes a woman around and then they steal her baby is about Rosemary.
Hell yeah. I do. Have we done that on the show?
Yeah.
I thought we had. Okay. God, what a cool movie.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I like movies where it has that late reveal and it's like, oh shit. Sometimes I like in movies where it's the early reveal where they don't.
Yeah.
I don't quite know where my line is, honestly, but for some reason in this movie, I do wish that it would have been a later reveal. Were you okay with the fact that we knew so early on in the movie what was up?
Yeah, again, I think, you know, as you said, Alex Esso is on the screen 95% of the time, if not 100. She's the focus of the movie. It's not a satanic cult. If the cult was the focus of the movie, then yeah. I think you're right. The two things you just said you liked, this is neither of those. She knows she is in danger. There's the potentiality of danger because he tried to sexually assault her. She moves past that for her dream.
That's not the Rosemary's Baby or the House of the Devil where both of them think they're just doing a nice thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. She does not think in any way that she is out of danger and she's doing a nice thing. She doesn't care what happens to anyone else. She will pursue this at all costs.
I think that's why I wish I knew her motivation. I think that's why I wish that I knew why she wants this stardom so bad and why I want to know anything about her background. Because we don't know anything about her prior to the events of what we're seeing in the movie. Her relentless drive to become a star, to become somebody and be a motion picture starlet, I wish I knew where that came from. And you know, I realize we're talking about a 90-minute movie with obviously budget limitations, but I feel like there was a way to give me more of an idea of why this is so important to her, other than like she is obsessed with this idea and that's all we get.
Well, I mean, I think the movie does try to present the fact that she's in a dead-end job using her beauty and looks for, you know, very little pay. Yeah. And if she's going to do that, she'd like to be getting paid more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is enough. I mean, like, the desire to escape poverty is enough for a motivation for this, I think. Yeah.
True. It's true.
But I think it could have done a better job, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think most of us, when we see restaurant job, we know that person's struggling. Like, that's just how it is. So, like, yeah, I don't think it needed to be more overt necessarily in that. But maybe, you know, it does show that she's struggling to pay the rent as well. And that the Astraeus Pictures money is what allows her to pay the rent. So, like, again, like, her motivation could be as simple as, I want to pay the rent. And I don't care who I have to go through to do that easily.
I'll tell you what's funny about this is we were watching it, and we have this story about this girl that, yeah, wants to become a star, you know, at any cost necessary, and is willing to give up so much to make that happen. I was watching the movie, and no shit, it was about halfway through, I was like, man, this kind of feels like a first draft, low rent Chuck Palahniuk storyline. Like, this feels like a movie like Invisible Monsters, you know? I don't know if you've read that one of Chuck's, but it's kind of a sort of a similar idea about somebody that wants to become a star and will just give up anything to do it. I was like, man, this has Palahniuk vibes to me. And then I was reading the trivia about it, and I guess one of the writers was like Chuck Palahniuk's webmaster. It's like, well, there we go.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there's definitely like more potential in this that if they had had a little bit more money,
maybe
they could have done a few different things that may have improved it in a lot of people's estimation. Though largely this has good reviews both among critics and among people on Letterboxd. So. I think people overlook slight imperfections on lower budget movies, knowing like, yeah, okay, sure, it could have been better, but like, what are you gonna do about that? You can't really make money up here.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the cast and how they perform?
Yeah, I mean, Alex Esso is amazing, and Pat Healy's good. The others, the friends, Noah Sagan, I've seen in several things. He's always good. He's the one who plays Danny. And then, you know, the other friends, like, they're doing this good job of, like, having lived in LA for a little while, I've been to the party that they have at the opening, where there's the guy up on stage just doing his weird, like, I don't know what presentation performance he was going for. I've been to a party where a dude did stand up. It wasn't his party.
Punishing.
He just like saw that there was a mic and went for it. Anyway,
that sounds horrible. I would flee.
The kind of like, I don't know, vapidness of some of them, and the fact that they all kind of suck and they all hang out. Like, the thing is, like, the people I hung out with largely didn't suck, so I didn't run across a lot of people that sucked. But you meet them at parties sometimes, and their friend group would all suck, and it makes sense. It makes sense that the friend group she ends up in, they all kind of suck. They're all, you know, kind of...
very cutthroat.
Cutthroat, detached from each other, detached from her especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, when she's like, starting to, you know, really feel the effects of the blowjob she gave, she starts feeling sick, she pulls up her shirt, and one of the dudes starts to fucking film it. Like... these people don't care about each other at all. Like,
no.
The only one who tries is her roommate. But also, like, and I don't blame the roommate character for this. But she's not fully invested in all of her, what's going on with her. Because they are roommates. Like, it seems like they are roommates before they're friends. And I can see why. If somebody's constantly having drama and constantly like having issues and whatnot, and you're also not getting that full friendship vibe from them, like, you don't really know what to do, right? Like, she's trying to be invested, she's trying to help, but at a certain point when you're in the kitchen and your roommate comes at you with seemingly sexual / murderous intent, like, I can see why you'd be like, I'm not sure I like this arrangement anymore. This kind of fucking sucks. Also, you're not paying the rent, so what's up?
I thought the way that she had to murder her friends was both ambiguous and yet on the nose. I mean, the producer guy had told her, like, oh, you know, to become a star requires sacrifice.
Right.
It's like, okay, yeah. Sacrifice means killing something, so I've got to go kill all my friends.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like that is kind of unexplained, where it's like, was that part of the ritual that we didn't hear about?
No, he does say kill your friends. He tells her specifically.
I must have missed that. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's just doing what is told. But also, I don't know exactly what the Astraea situation is, but it seems like it is a rebirth of Astraea, this god, in her vessel. So, like, at a certain point, it feels like she's not her anymore. It's like no longer Sarah. It's just now.
Yeah, it seems like she gives up her entire identity. Right.
Yes. Yeah. She's fully possessed. So like, it's also like kind of a commentary on stardom itself, that stardom is a possession. Like, it happens to you for a period of time. And for some people, that lasts a very, very long time. For some people, it's a very short time. But it's a possession. It's like a thing that comes on you, and then when it's gone, you don't even know what to do with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me ask you this. What do you think about the soundtrack going on in this movie?
It's interesting. I don't know that I love it all the time, but I love a synth score.
I do, too.
I know that the filmmakers originally wanted to do an orchestral score, which I think, with a satanic cult movie, you got to go orchestral score, usually, right?
Yeah.
But
I think so.
I don't know. I mean, look at House of the Devil again. House of the Devil has some different music than you might necessarily expect, though it goes with the vibe. And I think
it's
that
of the
might,
time, yeah.
Yeah. I think something about, like, a synth score and L.A. go together. So maybe that was the thought process. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure that works for me all the time.
I objectively like the score because I love all those 80s synth kind of things. The tones and the motifs and everything explored are really neat. Uh-huh. I don't know that it makes any sense of the movie. Like,
no,
I don't know that it really fits.
I don't know that it does. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, again, granted that this is a Kickstarter movie, dude, the amount of money it takes to do an actual orchestral score recorded by
huge.
Real
yeah.
musicians
yeah.
is colossal.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, does it ever take a lot of money to get classical musicians to play original music that you wrote for them? It takes a fucking ton.
Yeah.
You know, granted, nowadays we have really amazing stuff you can do digitally to semi-accurately recreate what's going on. But I get that doing a synth score was definitely cheaper. I don't know that it fits the movie all that well.
Yeah, there are times when I feel like it doesn't fit the vibe exactly. But, yeah, I think that's it. I think it's a limitation of budget. It's really your issue there. Like, it's just going to be always cheaper to use a synth score than an orchestral score. Though, as you said, yeah, now, yeah, at the very least, you can make a passable orchestral score digitally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true, man. What do you think about the aesthetic of the flick? I feel like it really has that very gray kind of monotone. It's not exactly like a beautiful movie to look at.
Right.
To me.
Yeah, I agree. I think the shot composition and stuff is all good. It's that like 2010s, like early 2010s digital that it doesn't catch a lot of good color, doesn't catch a lot of good, like, color gradient. It's really just kind of, as you said, like, it's kind of like a grayish mush. But, like,
yeah,
you know,
pretty movie.
No, they do a good job with what the limitations are. Especially, like, knowing that the directors, writers, Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer did the Valentine's Day segment on Holidays, which is very colorful. Like,
yeah, and it's good too. That's one of the better segments.
Yeah, I love that one. Yeah. So like, it's like they can do colorful. Was it just budget limitations? Was it just because I'm sure Holidays budget wasn't gigantic, but for a short, you don't need a ton of money.
Speaking of other stuff they did also did that Pet Sematary remake, which is
bad. Not good. And also feels kind of like Grey Mush, just in general.
It does. Yeah. 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 Just kind of a muddy, sort of hideous movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
A mixed track record on these guys, I would say.
Yeah, a little bit mixed. I think I really like this, and I do like the Holidays segment, but yeah, they haven't really done much since 2019. They worked on the Scream TV series and that Pet Sematary remake. I'm just wondering, like, I'd like to see them do something more like this and with the visual style of that Valentine's Day segment. I think that might be interesting. Not, you know, I say more like this. I don't want them to do Starry Eyes again, but, you know, something dark and interesting like this, but with a more of a color palette. And Pet Sematary, gosh, it was just so, boring. There's just nothing.
Yeah, fucking boring. Yeah,
nothing that stood out about it. Like, even that not great Pet Sematary Bloodlines or whatever, not good at all, but it's memorable. Like, I remembered shit about it, mostly that the stuff that was bad, but at least I remembered it. I don't really even remember much about Pet Sematary, except that the masks that those kids wore were appropriately creepy, but also it's like, to what end?
Yeah, made no sense at all, right?
Yeah.
Ugh, yeah, same. I don't really remember anything about that flick. There were interesting things that they did visually in this that I thought were pretty effective. Like, I especially think about that scene where she's having the dream where she's in the audition and she's looking down at her script. And at first, it's, you know, the script with her lines highlighted. Then the next time she looks down, the words are kind of jumbled. Then the next time she looks down, it's like really just cool. The highlighter marks, but like on a white piece of paper. It's like almost Charlie Kaufman-esque to me, like really nailing that surreal dream logic kind of shit. Okay. That was a cool shot to me, and that stood out.
Yeah,
to me.
It's really cool. Yeah, I really like that, and it's a real good visual representation of like not only like not being able to remember the line, but then even when you look at it, like you can't
nothing
process
there.
It. It's just not because you're so nervous.
It's like a dream, very, very, very dreamlike in that representation. So there's moments in this that I think are pretty cool in a visual sense. But generally the movie is brown and gray.
Yeah, that's
gravy colors.
Gravy colored movie, and I love gravy, but you know you don't want to layer gravies. It's not like sausage gravy, chicken gravy. Like that's what are you doing?
Gravy ain't for looking neither. I mean that's for dunking. You know
that's a good point. Nobody
it ain't looking gravy,
right? Nobody needs to look. They just taste. Just eat it.
Yeah. Overall, like I just feel like it was very on the nose. It was very, very on the nose. No allegory whatsoever. It's like, yes, you have to sell your soul to become somebody in Hollywood. We're going to tell that story by having someone sell their soul to become someone in Hollywood. Like, okay. All right. I see what you're saying here.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It is on the nose with that message. I think, though, like the additional elements of the fact that trade in sex is seemingly expected by these male producers and things like that. Like, I think it at the very least is timely, whether or not it intended to be. I assume, conversations in Hollywood at the time could have been going on regarding certain people like Harvey Weinstein. But, Harvey Weinstein wasn't the first. And it'd been around for a long time. So addressing it when they did a little bit before it really hit the mainstream and the knowledge was really out there, I think is something that can't be overlooked contextually. But the movie isn't exactly hiding any sort of message here. But I don't think the movie's message is you got to sell your soul to make it in Hollywood, though. Like, because I don't think she's supposed to be representative of every actor. She's representative of this particular character who's driven in Hollywood. Like, there, it's very much you can sell your soul to make it in Hollywood. Like, that's a thing that can happen. This is what it requires. You'll lose your friends. You'll change physically. Like, they'll literally get you plastic surgery and stuff like that. But again, that's not a very subtle metaphor. Like, I think it might be a little more complicated, but yeah, you're right. It's not very subtle. Not a problem for me, though. I think it works.
Well, I mean, clearly a lot of people really, really dig this movie. Are there any other things about it you want to point out or dig into?
Oh, man, no. I think, like, honestly, we've really talked the major points, and you're right. It is pretty simple in the sense of, like, the whole idea to it.
Which I do appreciate. I mean, so many movies now are 3 hours long and convoluted as fuck. And it's like, do we need all this to tell this story?
No,
really?
Yeah.
This is very minimalist. It's like, nope, I need 90 minutes and a story about a girl who's selling her soul to become someone in Hollywood.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's nice. And the fact that they executed it well with good performances, good effects. Like, I like all that. This is a movie that, you know, I don't know that I would sit down to watch it all the time because it's dark and the message
pretty grueling,
pretty bleak, yeah. But at the same time, watching it for the podcast was not hard. It's something that I definitely see the value of. So, you know, if we're coming to rating this, slap a number on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm in the, like, 6.5 range.
Okay.
I think, you know.
Above average.
It's above average. Yeah, I like it a lot. It definitely, you know, as we've pointed out all sorts of issues. And I think a lot of those are budgetary, for sure. And you know, maybe with a little more money into the production, we would hear a lot more people talking about Starry Eyes, potentially.
Hmm. Well, and I wondered too, like, if it would have come out closer to the Me Too and Harvey Weinstein stuff.
Sure,
and all that,
yeah,
like,
yeah. People would have been. It would have kind of been in the conversation. Yeah,
maybe a little ahead of the time.
Right. Yeah. But you know, I think all the positives outweigh a lot of the negatives. So yeah, for me, it's a little above average. It's definitely one that it made me look out for anything Alex Esso was in. Like, just her performance was just like, oh, well,
she sells it. Yeah.
If she's going to be in anything, it's worth watching. So,
for sure. That's good.
What about
man.
You?
I'm going to rate it a bit lower. I had a hard time feeling any kind of connection to these characters, especially our main character, just not knowing why she had that drive. Like, even just a little flashback scene to, you know, her childhood or something where she had this inspiration to become somebody and that's why it was so important to her. I would have appreciated it, and I think that would have gone a long way to make me feel like I understand why she's willing to do the things that she's doing. Things that she knows are fucked up and bad and wrong.
Wait. Right, so you're saying you want the Rob Zombie's Halloween of Star?
Yeah, honestly, and this is the rare case where I do want them to Bobby UK fucking. Oh, right, that's Robert Englund. No,
yeah.
Bobby Zed. Bobby Zed. Over explain this to me a little bit. I think would have given me some more connection to the character.
But I don't
there
think
is
you're supposed
cool
to connect.
Stuff.
She's she's bad. She's not a good person.
That's true. That's I mean, for sure. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. There were things about it that were cool, especially on the budget they were on, but overall I didn't find myself that drawn into it, that connected to it, that much caring about the characters and what was going to happen to them. So for me, I'm going to go lower. I think this is more like in the... man, it's like 3.5-ish for me.
Okay.
Yeah. But... that's just how I feel. That's just the way it is. Things will never be this way. Isn't that what they say?
I think so.
We want to know the way it is in your head over on the Facebook group, Instagram page, all the other places you guys can keep up with us on the Al Gore interweb, especially if you log on to our Patreon page and sign up to give us e-dollars.
Yep, yep. Yeah, you're going to open up your AOL browser and head on over to http://www.patreon.com/
That's it.
There you
That's
go.
That's us.
There you go.
That's where you'll find it. Press enter. You got to be sure to hit enter.
You're
going to
want to make sure your AOL browser's updated too. You know, don't be trying to go with this like 2.0 stuff. Get the 3.0.
That's right.
Anyway, head on over there, become a patron on any level. You get access to our Patreon exclusive episodes, including Hell Rankers. Got a Cheech and Chong Hell Rankers coming up for you. If you become a $5 patron, you get to submit a movie to the Smoking Bowl, like Jasmine Leland did. Then we draw a movie from the Smoking Bowl, and it could be yours for the low, low price of $5 a month.
Yeah, and maybe I dunk on it, and Steve thinks it's kind of okay.
I like it, yeah. Uh-huh.
It could happen to you.
Right.
So sign up today over on the Patreon page, and be sure to tune in next week when, oh my God, what's going on? It's April. You know what that means. April Fool. We're That's fooling right. you guys. We're fooling you.
Uh-huh. We're You're going to get so fooled. You're punked right now. Look at you.
You know about Action August. You ever tried hearing about Action April? April Fools. Action April Fools.
Action April Fools. That's
Branding.
Right.
That's what we're doing. We're doing a little wild. God, this is so terrible. We're doing a little wild card action, bringing you guys something a little different next time for Action April Fools. What are we doing?
A little wild card action for Action April Fools. We're doing over the top. Well, Sylvester
Fuck it, why not?
Stallone.
Why wouldn't we? You know?
Yes.
Movie about arm wrestling from 1987. What you know about that shit?
It's on Tubi. And if you've never seen it, honestly, watch it on Tubi. I feel like the commercials and everything just really make it make more sense. Because it's one half trucker trying to get his kid back movie and one half arm wrestling documentary.
How like life this is. Now, I got to be planning in advance. What kind of motor oil are you going to be sipping on during
show? I'm probably going to get me some Valvoline.
You're like a Valvoline man,
yeah?
Big V, huh?
Yeah. How about you?
Man, I'm a classic Pennzoil man over
Pennzoil!
Here.
Pennzoil! That'll get in your Pennzoil. Tummy. Make you better at arm wrestling.
You know what, though? Now that I think about it, aren't there some beers by... Shit. Who is it around here? In Knoxville, does like a 10W30 or 10W40
stout? Oh, really?
Stout?
That's cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Who is it that does that?
I don't know. Aunt
it's
Margaret.
Late and I'm tired and I'm drinking on a beer, so I cannot remember it right now. Might be Gypsy Circus does one of those. No, it's not. Fuck. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Maybe I'll try to find me one.
There you go.
Yeah. We'll find out about it on the next installment of Dead and Lovely, where I'll be Ben Eller.
I'll be Steven Spratling.
Use the last names this time. That's
that
really
weird.
Yeah. I slipped into that and I was like, why did I do that? Man, that was weird.
Anyway.
Yeah. And we'll be Dead and Lovely Eller. That's weird.
Did
Doesn't
you
work.
Marry the podcast?
Oh, man.
Damn it. Oh, don't get her pregnant, please.
That's the first step. Next step, you'll be letting you marry your dogs. You marry your podcast, you marry your dogs.
Slippery slope. They let you marry a podcast.
Well, I'm going to do a fucking 1080 backflip down that slippery slope next time. Peace, bitches.
Bye.
Now, I'm here to tell you, I've been skeptical about this for a long time, and I know a lot of you guys out there are too, but I'm just going to announce right now, after the success I've had with one miracle product I have tried firsthand, I'm getting into the essential oils game. That's right.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yep. That's an interesting turn. Why?
Well, okay. I know we all hear these stories about these, you know, middle-aged housewives. They start getting into the essential oils. They start peddling them to their friends, saying, oh, this is for peace and focus, and rub this oil on, and you'll have great success, yada, yada, yada. Okay, mostly malarkey.
Right.
But
okay,
I found one
mostly
product.
Mostly malarkey, right.
Mostly, okay. Mostly. Right. Except for the one that I've come across here, which I'll tell you, is okay. Truly a miracle essential product. I found something, which, you know, I've been struggling with my sleep and stuff
right.
here over the past couple of years, man. Sometimes I have those nights I just can't really sleep when I hit that pillar, right?
Uh-huh.
I found an essential oil that, man, I spray me a little bit on my pillar case before it's bedtime. I hit that thing, I'm out like a light. I'm
wow.
talking about the essential oil known as chloroform. That's right.
Yeah.
The most essential oil to help you sleep. You put a few sprays of that on your pillow every night, you're a goner.
Yeah.
It works.
I reckon you can't argue with the science.
Yeah.
No, you cannot argue with the science of chloroform. Yeah, you know, you're right. What's at the essence of?
You know, I've not really looked into the science behind it exactly. I'm kind of going off of faith and my own experiences. I've kind of done my own research, you know?
Oh, okay. That's helpful. Yeah. You want to do that. You want to get into your own research and really, but don't look too far into it.
Mm-mm. Well, yeah, don't go crazy or anything
yeah,
here, you know?
I mean, what are you, a nerd? No way.
Yeah, but I know from experience that this fucking works. So I'm starting my essential oil empire right now with my chloroform pillow spray.
Wow. I mean, have you thought maybe like expanding out? Like, you know, I don't know if all essential oils, you know, they have those like steamer things or whatever that shoot them out everywhere. What is it?
Mm-hmm.
Like
a yeah, diffuser kind of
diffuser.
Thing.
Diffuser.
Yeah.
There you go. Is there a way to maybe, I don't know, like, you could figure out a way to diffuse, like, say, I don't know, heroin. To calm
Ooh.
Everybody down.
That's
Just
a pretty good idea.
Right? Mm, you know,
that's not a bad idea.
If you, I say you're having your family over for Thanksgiving, and normally you all fight. Well, you just take a little essence of heroin, put it into your diffuser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you wait until everybody's got there, and then you turn that on, and everybody's going to be chill. They're going to be laid back. You probably won't even have to cook.
That's an essential oil right there for sure, right? Keeps families going.
Heroin keeps families going.
I think, judging by the success I've had with the calming properties of my chloroform pillow spray.
Right.
I think I'm going to try to start soaking like some wicks in that and putting it in the air vents in my car to help me stay real calm while driving.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You want,
a lot of people get stressed. They get worked up when they're driving.
And you can't be too stressed when you're knocked out.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. It'll just keep you real calm while you're driving your car.
Right? You won't have a single worry.
Man,
wow.
So many wonderful new
Genius.
Products to be on the lookout for. And you heard them here first on Dead and Lovely.
That's right. Listen, if you're looking to invest in obviously good products, you contact us. Call us at 555-55-DEAD-AND-LOVELY.
Yeah, that's right. We're waiting for your offers.